Away the long box and get up on that soapbox. Panels on pigs, left I'm holding down like Grimlock. Cooler than Bobby Drake and hot as Emma Frost. We blowing minds like an episode of Lost. And if it's an awful snack, then you can call it popcorn. In your brain so deep, you're thinking it's typical porn. Online and worldwide, the web just got better. We'll bring you the deepness right down to the letter. So turn up the volume and get ready for the drop. Cause if it's panels on pages, then...
This is the interview of PanelsOnPages.com, gave with Kevin Conroy, the voice of Batman, on November 17th, 2009. You can find the entire episode from this interview at episode 31. You can find that and all the other episodes at PanelsOnPages.com, and you can find us on iTunes by searching on Panels on Pages. So yeah, hope you all enjoy this. I know we sure as hell did. So instead, yes, we're talking to Batman this week. So how you doing, sir?
Very well. How you doing?
Not too shabby, gotta tell you.
Good.
So, yeah, lots of stuff to talk about. You've actually been quite busy lately. We have the, Superman, Batman, Public Enemies is out. Arkham Asylum is out. Like I said, just guest on the Venture Brothers. Been quite busy lately, huh?
Yeah, and the reaction has been great to both of those projects, so I'm really happy about that.
Very cool.
It was fun working with Tim Daly again and Mark Hamill for the video game. So, it's, you know, great groups of actors in both projects. And Clancy Brown was in the Superman Batman one too. So
now
you know, it's when you come back together working with actors you've worked with for a long time, it's always a lot of fun, and it's very easy because you fit right back into the routine that you've established over so many years. So we have good working relationships.
I know one of the things that a lot of the readers and listeners were curious about, and I was too for that matter, was how the video game plays out opposed to the TV series, because you all recorded together for the TV series, right? Or were you all independent?
Yeah, we do them like well, that's a unique thing about Warner Brothers. They like to get all the actors together in a soundstage, and you do it like a radio play. You record it so that there's a lot of interaction. And that's why the performance quality is always very high. A lot of the other studios, like Disney, they like to record everyone separately. That way they have complete control of the master recording. You know, in terms of editing, they have completely clean recordings of each voice. But they don't get the same kind of performance quality that they do at Warner Brothers, I don't think. So so Bruce Timm and Andrea Romano... have always tried to get all the actors at the same time. It's hard in L.A. because everyone has such diverse schedules. You know, most people are working on other projects, and it's hard to get everyone in the studio at the same time, but they always try to. But the video game was a different deal because it takes so many hours to record one. It takes usually two... days of 8-hour sessions, and normally it's just you in the booth for that period of time. So those are done separately, where you're alone, and it's much harder to keep your energy up and keep your spontaneity. You have to kind of feed yourself a lot of to keep yourself, you know, sort of inspired. Whereas when you're doing the episodes or the movies, you get fed by the other actors, you know. There's a lot of give and take. So it's very hard doing those video games.
It's not the first one you've done, right? You've done, what, three other ones so far, yeah?
Oh, yeah, no, I've done a number of them. It's just a totally different experience.
Sure.
It's a very kind of, think about it, you know, you've got to do so many different alternative reads for each line depending on how the game is played, depending on, you know, which alley the player goes down. There's a whole different script, you know. So it takes days of just you giving, you know, various line readings and trying to keep them all interesting. They usually want three or four takes of each reading so that they can get a clean one. And they want various emotional interpretations of each line. So it's very draining. You feel really wrung out after you've done it.
So do you end up standing around doing various grunts and groans after being kicked and punched and whatnot?
Exactly.
No, yeah, we needed a little more oomph on that last oomph there, Kevin.
Yeah, really. They always do a couple of hours of those, you know, just groan.
Hours? Oh, my God. Hours? Jesus.
Yeah.
It's really
mind-bending doing those things. It's not doing the movies is fun, and the episodes is a lot of fun. Everyone wants to do them, but doing the games is not fun. It's a job, you know.
As someone who's played through the game, I would like to thank you for every painstaking hour and second. Because
oh, great, yeah, no, it really pays off. I don't mean to say that I don't understand how much it pays off. It's just that. It's not. It's a much more laborious process than the movies are.
Yeah.
And but I know it was a very successful game, and people love it. And I was really impressed with it. I was amazed at the quality of it. But it's just it's a much more laborious thing to go through than the other stuff.
It definitely would not have been the same experience without you and Mark Hamill back. It's,
oh, thanks.
I mean, that
was great
that just,
seeing him again. You know, he and I have been working together for 18 years. We started recording in 91.
That's ridiculous.
Isn't that incredible?
That's nuts.
For animated voices? I mean, I think it's some kind of a record. It's got to be some kind
of record. As far as the teams go, I think it probably is.
Yeah.
I knew I wanted the game, you know, I was very excited, whatever, but I was watching TV one night, and I was in the kitchen, and the commercial came on where you were, you know, it's you as Batman saying, you know, something about, you know, the I've spent years filling the halls, but now I journey into the shadows to return to fear. I just stopped dead in my tracks, and I'm like, what the hell am I hearing? And I came, you know, tearing ass out into the living room, and I saw the commercial on the TV, and I'm like, oh, well, that's shit's definitely happening now.
Yeah, I know. That was the reaction of a lot of the audience. It was really great. It was really great.
One of the things I really loved was when it premiered primetime. So that was – it gave me something to look forward to, because after a certain time in the day – TV kind of died for children, so
I know.
It was something I could watch with my dad. And it was
successful primetime. It was on Fox originally, and it was very successful. That was a programming choice to move it away from where it was. It did very well that first couple of years on Fox, and then Warner Brothers took it back and put it on WB.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. And then it went through different incarnations. You know, it was the Batman the Animated Series, and then the Adventures of Batman and Robin, and then it was Justice League and Batman Beyond. There were all these different incarnations of the story. But you're right; the original one was prime time, and it did well.
It's all gold.
Now, one of our listeners, I think it was Batman JM25, had actually asked, did you have a favorite series of them? I mean, I know you're playing the same character throughout, but was there one take that you enjoyed more, the tone that you preferred?
I actors always like to be challenged. They always like to feel like they're stretching their muscles, sort of, you know. So there was one episode, Perchance to Dream, where Batman is drugged, and so I was Batman and Bruce Wayne, and also drugged Batman, and then in his drugged state, he dreams about his childhood. So I had to be young Bruce Wayne, and also Bruce Wayne Sr., my father. So I was doing five voices, and all of them had to be believably related but distinct. And what was fun was Andrea and Bruce Timm really respect we all respect the work that everyone does. You know, there's a great deal of reciprocal admiration among all the people working on the show. Everyone, you know, really admires the work everyone does. So they were, they loved the idea that I wanted to challenge myself by doing the whole show in real time, rather than doing all of one voice and then all of another and then all of another. I wanted to go back and forth between the voices to do it like I was acting with myself
in one take.
And
the voices,
they let me do that.
Oh my God!
And it was phenomenally fun. It was a great fun show to do. And then they decided to do it mostly in black and white when he went into his dream state.
Right. Yeah.
So it was visually really interesting, very noir, and the script was very kind of gothic. And the acting challenge for me was really big. So that's one of my favorite ones.
Now Wrath on Our Boards actually specifically asked about that episode and was wondering, you know, how tough it was to switch between the roles, and you know, was there any specific trick that you used to be able to, you know, some specific memories or whatever that you used to switch back and forth?
What I've done with Batman ever since the first audition back in 91 is I've never really gotten the sound by doing a vocal trick. I've always gotten it by getting my head in the emotional place that Bruce Wayne lives in. That's how I came up with the sound to begin with, by just using my imagination in the sound booth and letting the sound come out of me, whatever sound it was, and it just got to be this very dark and husky and mysterious kind of sound came out. And that was just where my voice went. I didn't think of that beforehand. So when I was doing the episode Perchance to Dream, I just put my head in the place that each character would be, and the sound came out. It's always, I'm very proud of the work that I've done on the show and that all the actors have done on the show, because Andrea directs it in a way that she doesn't go for tricks and she doesn't go for gimmicks. She goes for very organic sounds that come out of actors. She loves to cast actors and she gets them to come up with very organic sounds. So that's why it's all very believable. You don't get a lot of cartoony sounds in any of the Batman stuff. It's all very real. And that's been the style of the show. That was the way they were going. And those are the kind of actors they like to work with. So in doing that episode, I would say that rather than thinking of sort of vocal tricks to define each of the different characters, it was the head. It was going into the head of each character that was different, and then the sound would come out. And once you do it that way, it's actually very easy.
So now, kind of on the same note, like, you were the first actor to portray Batman to really give Batman and Bruce their own separate voices, like to actually play them almost as two different people. Was that something?
Was that your idea? I wanted to do that early on. That was my idea, and in the first, actually, the first, I think, probably four episodes, there was a really distinct sound. I played Bruce Wayne as much more of a kind of a dilettante and kind of a playboy, and very sarcastic, a lot of sarcasm and irony. That was my sort of take on him, is that he was very ironic, and they loved it. But when they started doing the artwork for the show, they decided to go in a much darker color palette. In fact, the shows are actually painted on a black background,
right, yes,
which was unique. But all of those decisions were being made early on, and we'd already recorded a few episodes. So you had this very dark, noir-y looking show painted on a black background, and then the Bruce Wayne voice would come up, and he's very ironic and witty and, you know, playboyish, and it was too jarring. So they had me go back and actually re-record the first few episodes, just the Bruce Wayne voice, to make him closer to the Batman voice, so that there was a distinction, but it wasn't so dramatically distinct.
Well, talking about jarring, I was just rewatching them not too long ago, and jarring in a good way in watching On Leather Wings, the first episode, when, you know, Batman's down in the cave and he's dressed as Batman and he gets a call for Bruce Wayne. Alfred brings him the phone and you deliver the line in the Bruce Wayne voice, but we're seeing Batman. And it's,
yeah, isn't that cool? Yeah.
It's amazing how much difference there was in your two deliveries. I mean, obviously it was there, but I think that scene so perfectly encapsulated it.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a very cool scene. I forgot about that actually. Yeah. Yeah. That was a very cool scene. I love that they had the visual of Batman and then the voice of Bruce Wayne.
Yeah,
that was. But originally, think about it, that was a toned down version. Originally,
right.
The voice was much different. And that was really, that's why they had me tone it down. It was just too jarring.
You wanted to have him yucking it up too much in the cowl, yeah?
Exactly. I was having too much fun, you know, yeah, exactly.
I thought it was really telling, too, that whenever it was just Bruce and Alfred or Bruce and Dick alone, he would talk like Batman.
As if,
you know, whenever he was affecting the Bruce voice, that was more of a character than Batman, or, you know, more of a
well,
facade
that's always
than
been
Batman ever
my
was.
Take on the character,
sure,
too, is that Batman is his real persona, and that Bruce Wayne is the artificial persona. Bruce Wayne is the mask that he puts on for the world. And when he's alone, his real natural self is the Batman character.
Yeah,
that's been my take on it. That's where he's most comfortable. Everybody has a public face and a private face. Everyone has a private self that they kind of mask from the world. And to me, the Bruce Wayne is the public face, the one that he puts on for the world. And Batman is his true soul.
Absolutely.
That's beautiful.
you have...
Am I going to make you cry?
Well, no, but I'd like to let you know that I know you're not sitting at a computer right now, but we have people in the chat of both genders right now who are professing their undying love and lust for you.
We have men
that's
wanting to have you.
In fact, I've gotten it a long time.
In fact, Lee's wife is one of them.
Yes, my wife Nicole is listening, and she very much wants you to say hi, Nicole. Would you do her that favor?
Hi, Nicole. How are you?
There it is.
I'm changing my name to Nicole tomorrow and then replaying that clip.
She's in the other room, and I just heard her shriek through the walls. So. You made her day, sir. Thank you very much.
That's great.
Thank you very much.
Usually we're a lot more gossipy and high-pitched and talking, and you've, like, stunned us into, like, this professional silence, and everyone's like, you guys sound so professional right now.
I hope I'm not boring everybody.
Not at all. Everyone's just really surprised that we are, what are we, we're 20 minutes in, and we haven't made one dick joke yet. I think it's really uncomfortable for everybody. So...
It's jarring.
I don't think they know what to
yes,
do with us.
Yes, exactly. We've become Bruce Wayne.
Yeah.
Oh,
exactly.
No. Oh, no. It's contagious.
No, that's amazing. That's good stuff. But no, so, I mean, you've I don't know if it's – is it just the time that you spent as the character that – I mean, you've definitely got some definite insight into the character beyond just doing a voice. Like, you know, you know Batman. So was that – were you – a fan before, or is that just something that you've kind of garnered with your familiarity just over the years
you know,
of doing the role?
To be completely honest, and I know that people who are like you who are really into the show are disappointed when I tell them this, but to be absolutely completely honest, I was not really that familiar with the Batman legacy as a lot of other people are. I really only had, when I went into audition for it, I was pretty much a blank slate. I knew the Adam West series, because when I was a kid, you know, it was on TV.
Oh, man.
And when they, yeah, I know, that was my
what
only,
a frame
that
of
was
reference.
My only, that was it, that was it. And then when I went in, they said, you know, we're doing Batman, we're going to be, you know, doing the thing, do you have any questions? And I said, well, it's the, you know, like, you know, the Adam West series in the 60s, and Bruce Timm practically jumped out of his chair. He said, no, no, no. He said, is that your only reference? He said, my God. And he said, no, it's the Dark Knight, and he's, you know, is avenging his parents' death, and he lives in the shadows, and he's, you know, he went through this whole thing, and I said, wow, you're describing Hamlet. This is like Hamlet. And he said, well, no one's ever made that comparison before. So I said, I get it. It's, you're going very dark, very noir, very very serious. And it has nothing to do with that 60s campy show. But, yeah, that was my only exposure to it. So in a way, I think that played in my favor because I was a clean slate. I just was able to use my imagination to come up with a cold reading.
Yeah, you weren't trying to be somebody else being Batman.
Yeah, I wasn't going in with a lot of baggage and with a lot of preconceived ideas. The only preconceived I had was the Adam West series, and they told me to wipe that slate out. That wasn't it at all.
There will be no shark repellent.
So I had no point of reference at that point. So I had just my own imagination to go with, and I just happened to, by pure luck, come up with the right sound. So it was really just a bizarre series of circumstances. A lot of people say, oh, how do you get into animation? And I want to do what you're doing. And how did you get into it? And I always say, well, to be honest, it was a really bizarre path. I mean, I trained at Juilliard for 4 years. I worked in the Broadway theater. I was in L.A. just doing a television series. And my agent said, go on over and try out for this new animated show. I'd never done any animation voices before. It was,
wow.
It was completely... just an actor fitting a role. You know, it was just really a fluke. I was a very, very lucky break, but one that I had been training for years. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's actually pretty, that's amazing, actually.
Yeah. It is amazing. It really is when you think about how fluky it was that I mean, I live in New York. I happened to be in L.A. doing another show when they were putting this together. Everything about it was just happenstance. I had never done any animation voices before. I'd done commercial voiceovers, but I'd never done any animation.
So who would come first? Was it you or Mark Hamill that came on first? And like, no, how did your meeting with Mark go?
Well, actually, we were both in the first... I was brought on first. And they actually cast the Batman voice first, and then they were placing the other voices around it, I think.
Sure.
But Mark and I were in the, it's a funny story, we were in the, you know, we recorded a bunch of episodes, before anyone saw anything. Because, you know, it takes about 6 months from recording to actually painting the show. And then it comes back from the artists and you do what's called ADR, which is the cleanup.
Right.
Syncing the soundtrack to the visual and doing the oomphs and offs and, you know, the fight sounds. And so there was a good 6 months of recording shows until we actually saw anything back in 91. And Mark and I, as it turned out, the first thing to come back from the artists was one that was with the Joker. And so the two of us were in a sound studio together at Warner Brothers. And this, you know, on a full screen, movie screen, this vroom comes up of the sound, and then these brilliant colors and this incredible visuals.
So this is the first time you've ever seen it.
And both of us just, it came time for us to say our lines and neither of us could say anything. We were just sitting there with our mouths hanging open. I looked over and I said, did you have a clue that this is what this was going to look like? He said, no. He said, I am blown out of my chair. He said, I had no idea that it was going to be this quality. I didn't either. I mean, they spent twice as much money per half hour of television time as had previously been spent in animation.
Oh, well, yeah, there was nothing
like
that.
That's how much they
before.
They doubled the budget for this show when it was first done. And, you know, you could see it on the screen. It was so, the art was so beautiful, and the full symphony score, everything about it was just really just blew you out of the room. So...
And the scores were. Sorry, the scores were by Shirley Walker.
Yeah, Shirley Walker. Yeah.
Gotcha.
And you know, it wasn't just a few musicians; it was a symphony. So you know, they spent a lot of money on that show.
Want to pay it off? I mean, because it's you know,
well, yeah,
outside
exactly.
of the core,
it was a
you know,
great investment. But think about what a chance they took, because it was a big investment at a time when all the studios were downsizing. They came in with this, you know, both guns blaring, basically.
You want cartoons? You want them cheap?
And unfortunately, to be honest, a few years later, Warner had a change of administration, and they. Someone came in to run Warner Brothers who just he admitted that he just didn't get animation. And you know, can you imagine someone taking over one of the
Warner Brothers?
What was the best animation shop in L.A. at the time, who just wasn't that interested in animation. So one by one, everybody left, and that shop just disintegrated. Mm. It was so sad to see. It was really sad to see.
And so it was that around the time where it went to WB and the art style changed?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, it just everyone went away.
The WB episodes are good.
A lot of the artists left.
Yeah, the WB episodes are good, but they don't quite have the grit that the Fox episodes did. It's much more polished. It's much more clean and refined. It looks more like you know Bruce Timm's contemporary art, but it doesn't have quite that same noir feel as the original Fox shows did.
I know.
And I think it became more of a. I always felt like it became more of a superhero show and less of a interpersonal drama.
Well, definitely that happened when it went into the Justice League.
Oh yeah,
age.
Yeah.
I mean, then it was just a superhero show, and
right.
I don't think those shows were as interesting as the earlier shows. But some of the later movies were really interesting.
Absolutely.
They were really interesting.
I just watched Mask of the Phantasm, as a matter of fact.
Well, yeah, that's what I was thinking of. It's Sub-Zero. But there you had, you know, really interesting writers, and a lot of money was spent again. You can always tell when the studio's willing to spend money, because the product just shows it. It takes an investment. It takes an investment to come up with some really good stuff. And when they cut too far, you can always tell.
Return of the Joker. The Batman Beyond movie.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that came out really well. Yeah.
God, I love that. That is just perfection.
yeah, it's a great movie.
And so you mentioned Justice League, and earlier you were saying that you would always record like a radio play. So would that extend beyond the Batman show, and when you had these huge ensembles for Justice League, would they still manage to get you all together for your scenes?
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Yeah. Isn't that amazing? Yeah, as much as they could. You know, occasionally you'd have to do someone separately, but oh God, I'm so bad. I'm blanking on his name. The actor who does Jean.
Is it Phil Lamar that does Jean Jones?
Carl Lumley.
Carl Lumley. Carl lives in San Francisco, and I live in New York. Most of the rest of the cast lives in L.A. So, you know. Getting that group together was not easy,
yeah.
But they did. They did.
Excellent. I just want to touch real quick. I was reading up some bios and whatnot, not to completely change the subject, but I found it completely interesting. I read, and this may not be true because it is the dreaded internet and it's full of bullshit. But did you room with Christopher Reeve at one point?
No.
Okay.
It's funny that they twisted the story, because that's close but not true. Chris was at Juilliard the same time I was. He was 2 years ahead of me. He was a little older than me. And we almost rented a apartment in Tribeca together. He had found this incredible apartment, but I was a full scholarship student, and I couldn't afford it, so I didn't do it. But who I did end up rooming with was another full scholarship student, Robin Williams.
Did you have to vacuum a lot?
What?
Did you have to vacuum a lot?
Why?
All the loose body hair.
How did you know that about him?
Uh-huh.
Oh, that dorm room shower drain must have been a mess.
He is a hairy guy. He really is. How did you know that?
I've seen his arms. I can only imagine what happens with the rest of the body.
He
is. It's funny.
He gets naked in a movie called World's Greatest Dad, directed by Bobcat Goldthwait.
And that is going off of the Netflix queue.
They had to shave him and everything. It was terrible.
Oh!
Yeah.
No, he's funny. He is. He's bestial. He is some. Yeah, he's got a lot of hair.
But
we were
bestial.
We roomed for 2 years. We shared an apartment. He's a great guy. He's a great guy. He's a wonderfully talented man. But we were actually in the same group at Juilliard with Kelsey Grammer, who was also in the same group.
Oh, and Franny Conroy
from 6 Feet Under. It was probably one of the best classes Juilliard's ever had. It was kind of a famously talented group of actors.
Yeah, no kidding.
A lot of really talented people.
No joke.
Yeah.
I wonder how that's so bizarre that somehow managed to twist into you roomed with Christopher Reeve. That's bizarre.
Yeah, I know. That's why I was saying it's funny it twisted that way because Robin and Christopher were actually really close buddies.
I think people just wanted to think that Batman slept in the same room as Superman.
Yeah, exactly.
They just wanted it to be true.
Weird. But we were there at the same time, and Christopher was a wonderful, wonderful guy, and it was horrible what happened to him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely no argument on that one. It's awful stuff.
So
how did you end up on the Venture Brothers? Like, was that part written for you, or how did that work out? Did they write the story and then say, hey, come check it out, or did they approach you first and say, this is what we want to do? Like, how that managed to work out?
Well, yeah, they told me what they wanted to do and just contacted me through my agents, and we did it.
Now, Gojira Doho on our boards was wondering if you ended up having any input into that character, since it was so clearly based on, your prior role, or was it basically, just a day at the office, you got the script and did your thing?
That's basically it. The actors don't have that much input into the creative process, unfortunately. I wish we had more. But, that's just...
Any chance Captain Sunshine will make a triumphant return to the Venture family?
I don't know. I don't know. I have to talk to the writers about that.
Get on it, Matt.
Yeah.
So.
Come on, Matt.
Consider it done.
There you go.
Now,
scribble.
I can't help but notice the sort of parallel. You did the episode Beware the Grey Ghost. Adam West comes on, plays a very Batman-like character.
Yeah.
And you get to play that role, and you had, this was the Batman that you knew, so much different from the one you'd become, but did you ever think that you'd be kind of flip-flopping and be playing the, not to compare Captain Sunshine to the Grey Ghost, but coming back and
please
being,
compare Captain Sunshine to the Grey Ghost. Please do.
That's my thesis statement. But did you ever think that you'd be brought back in that sort of position?
No, of course not. But, I have to say, Adam West, it was so great meeting him and working with him. He's a great guy. And he's so, I was a little nervous about meeting him because he's, you never want an actor to feel like you're kind of treading on his territory. And he couldn't have been nicer. Really gracious and very, and, he did a wonderful job with The Grey Ghost. So, I liked working with him.
I'm making mental notes to go back and watch all these episodes because it's been so long. I'm like, they're all so good. Write them all down.
There are a lot of good episodes.
Speaking of working with Adam,
Do you remember the first the opening of Sub-Zero? I've always loved the opening of that movie. It's shot from underneath the ice in the Arctic,
and you
see the running of the polar bear's feet across the ice. I love that visual. But, you know, all of the Batman stuff is full of visuals like that. The artistry is just great.
Yeah. It's all, it's just gold. There was nothing like it before, and, you know, to be quite honest, there's not, been nothing like it since, and just, and it's never going to happen.
It was such a brilliant idea to set it in the, you know, the police Zeppelins and the sort of old-fashioned, yet at the same time, slightly futuristic, you know, cars.
Yeah, it's just timeless. It's timeless. Completely
it's
timeless.
It's such a timeless kind of...
You know
what it's sort of reminiscent of? Did you ever see the movie Brazil?
Yeah.
Yep.
You know what I mean? It was that kind of futuristic but retro at the same time.
Yeah, crazy like, tech, but black and white television. You know?
Yep.
It was like a modern steampunk punk kind of...
Yeah, sort of.
We have the chat room is going crazy right now. People, you did San Diego this year to promote Public Enemies. Have you been contacted by the Reed people to go to the C2E2 convention in Chicago? Because we have a lot of listeners going to that, and everyone is very excited at the prospect of you being there.
No, I haven't heard about from anyone from Chicago. No, so
we will make sure you do.
If you want to put in a word for me,
I'm doing it right now.
Yeah, we have
a chat
room.
There's a Comic Con in Chicago.
The same folks that put on the New York Comic Con are putting on the Reed Entertainment people. They're putting on C2E2, which is Chicago Comic Entertainment Expo. It's the first year is going to be 2010, and I mean it's shaping up to be like one hell of a show. Like it's going to be a big deal, and so they're trying to get all kinds of great programming. So we'll definitely put it in an email. I've been emailing those guys for months now about other various things. So I'll just send them one more. Like, by the way,
well, good.
We talked to Batman. He wants in. So,
and I'm pretty sure everyone hearing the sound of your voice right now will also be emailing them.
Yeah.
Great.
And this only goes out to I don't know a few thousand people every week. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you know, what's also been fascinating about doing the show is the people that want to come on and do the show, the actors, because it got to be known as such a quality product early on. They could get virtually anyone they wanted, Warner Brothers and Andrea Romano. So after I think it was about the 100th episode, they took out a full page ad in Variety.
Oh, really?
And to thank everyone who had been involved in the show. And they listed all the actors up to that point who'd been in it. It was an incredible list of names. I hadn't realized how many interesting people had been on that show. So that, you know, the bookings, because like I said, they like to do them like radio plays. So they get everyone in the studio together. You go in each week, and it's just such a pleasure going in there to meet everybody. Meet actors you never would normally get to work with. And it got to have that reputation, so everyone wanted to come on. I remember Ice-T came in one week, and I said, "What are you doing here?" This is before he started doing L.A. Law. I said, "You're a rap star. You know, you probably make a zillion dollars. What are you doing?" He said, "Are you kidding?" He said, "This is, you know, everyone I know loves this show." I said, "I want to be on this show. Everyone loves this show. I wanted to see what's going on in here." And, you know, you get that from a lot of people who would come on who'd never done any kind of animation before.
That's awesome. I don't know why, but for some reason, Ice-T digging on Batman tickles me to no end.
I know.
But I'm not surprised. You know, I mean, it's you think about it, and it's kind of shocking, but then you think back at that show, and it was... You know, we've said it, but it was so beautifully produced.
Yeah.
And it the writing, the voice acting, just everything was so on point that I can't imagine there being many people who were exposed to it who didn't just instantly fall in love.
Yeah, that's what happened. And people would want to come on just because they heard it was a great show to do and fun to do. And they'd always have a blast. People would always leave and say, "Oh, please let me come back. Please. This is the most fun I've had acting in a long time.
Please don't kill my character."
Right.
Let me live.
I know
please.
I was driven off a cliff at the end of the episode, but see, here's how
could
I come back.
My twin brother could come back. Exactly.
So two
and he wants to kill Batman out of vengeance.
That's damn funny.
So.
Okay, I heard something upsetting pretty recently that they had you, you'd have to sign a contract per episode, even though it was so successful.
Oh, yeah. There was no ongoing contract for anyone. Every time we go in, there's a whole set of papers to sign. Isn't that amazing?
Really?
Think of the mountains of paperwork. That's just how they do it. That every show is like a different job.
That's
crazy.
And
you re-sign every time you go in.
This is Warner Brothers. We've been doing the talkies for decades. This is how we do it.
Bugs Bunny signed the same goddamn contract, okay?
Yeah, it's really wild.
Trying to think you're better than Bugs Bunny, huh? No?
I know.
Wow.
That's crazy. I had not heard that. That's
yeah, that made me upset. That made me very upset when I was
well,
like...
Don't take it that way. It's purely a business thing. It's just so that each show is totally separate entity, I guess.
Yeah, it's like each one is its own intellectual property at that point. That's very strange. Very interesting.
But the mere slight inkling of a chance that suddenly John Goodman's playing Batman on me... And it's like, no, not Frosty the Snowman. I want
Batman 2000. Or like Gilbert Gottfried.
Oh.
Hey, you know what? I would actually watch a show with Gilbert Gottfried as the Joker. That could be good times.
It would be funny.
Wasn't he the voice of Mixis Pitlick?
Yes, he was Mixis Pitlick. That's right. Yeah. Yeah, good call. Wow, throwback. Good one. You see that? You hear that? That's nerd cred, sir.
Yeah, exactly. Kevin's nerd like, cred. Oh, I didn't realize I was dealing with that level of nerd.
No. Don't go there.
Now, Kevin, another question that we'd had from one of our forum goers, Goof, asks, of all the lines that you've said as Batman, did you have a personal favorite? Is there anything that's really stuck with you?
Well, the one, you know, the signature line, of course, is the one that they always have me do, which is, you know, I am vengeance, I am the night, I am Batman. But
I'm familiar with that one.
Goosebumps.
No kidding, right? Well, I know
But there, you know, it's hard to think of specific lines from so many shows from so many years. But there have been a lot of really, really great lines.
I remember being at my grandmother's house for Thanksgiving, and
are you Canadian?
No, I am not.
You know what? Oh my God, that is so funny that you said that.
I'm half French Canadian, but I.
We give him shit constantly for being un-American, and for you to say that, just, oh my God.
No, you said house.
Oh, all right.
You said I was at my grandmother's house.
You should talk to him about his banana bread sometime. Rock your world, sir.
I do rock banana bread.
Yes, exactly.
No, I thought I heard a Canadian accent, because you said house. Anyway, sorry.
Oh, that's awesome.
I was at my grandmother's for Thanksgiving, and we'll notice that I skipped the H word this time. And my uncle had
grandma's crib.
Thankfully, relinquished control of the remote. You know, I was sick of football, and I'd put on Batman. And so my uncle's puttering around wherever, and I forget which episode the line comes from, but my uncle turns to me and says, "Did Batman just say, I've become a cliche?" And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, "What the hell are you watching?" Like, you know, he hadn't paid attention. It's Batman. He's probably thinking Adam West, too. And Batman says, "I've become a cliche." And he's just completely thrown for a loop.
Isn't that great? What a great line.
Yeah.
That's great. I've become a cliche.
Since when did Batman get existential?
Oh.
Yeah, basically we just
I don't
have,
remember what I don't remember what show that was in.
I kind of think it was the episode where the robot Batman from Hardak had come back, but I'm not 100% sure.
Part of Heart of Silicon or Heart of Silicone?
I think that was it. I know Batman was standing at the chasm, like, of course, you know, you remember because that's exactly where you were standing, but... But Batman's
I remember that chasm so well.
Batman's standing at the chasm in the cave, and he, like, throws his cowl into the bottomless pit and says, I've become a cliche. And it was just such this powerful moment.
Wow. I can be so dramatic, can I?
Oh, very much so, sir. So, let's see. We have a couple of questions here. Just real quick. One of our readers, Joshua, our good buddy Josh, he has a question for Batman specifically. He says, Batman, where's the best place to get a cheeseburger? So, if Batman had to choose, where would he go to get a cheeseburger?
Where would Batman go to get a cheeseburger?
See? That's a new one, right?
That's right. A new one. I don't eat cheeseburgers. I don't know where I'd get a cheeseburger. Where would Batman get a... I don't know.
I'll get drive-through.
Oh, my God, I forgot that commercial.
I get a drive-through. I get a flame-broiled burger at Wendy's. How's that?
Nice. Going back, the line was actually apparently from the episode I Am the Night.
There you go.
Where I think it's the one that featured heavily the scene in Crime Alley, laying the roses down.
Uh-huh.
And that's
he's just checking.
Yeah, he's questioning himself throughout. I'm looking at some of the quotes from IMDb here, and you know, Batman says I should have been there, and Robin says you can't be everywhere. I let him down. You're being hard on yourself.
A dramatic reading.
I
brought to you by
that.
Jason Kerouac.
Interchange. Yeah.
All right, well, I know you have it ready to go.
And what do I say? Then I say I want a cheeseburger. Is that it?
I can't have cheeseburger. So, I know we're getting short on time, but before you go, could you just do us a favor and record us, give us a little drop, just something along the lines of, you know, it's Kevin Conroy, you're listening to the panelsonpages.com podcast, something like that?
You're listening to what?
The panelsonpages.com podcast, if you'd be so
good. Panelsonpages.com podcast.
Yes, popcast with a P. Okay. Excellent.
Popcast.
Yes.
Hi, this is Kevin Conroy, the voice of Batman, and you're listening to the panelsonpages.com podcast.
Excellent. Thank you very much, sir.
Sure.
We are going to wear that out.
Yes, we are.
And we got one more. Can you say hi, Lauren, in the chat one more time? We got another folks wanting to say hi. Just shout outs.
Hi, Lauren. This is Batman. Get in the cave.
We've actually begun a rap station giving shout outs.
All right, one strange request. Can you say, I miss having a basement?
Oh.
I miss having a basement.
Oh, right.
Wow.
Thank
you.
Okay.
Inside joke, sir. Thank you very much.
All right. Well, good talking to you.
Thank you very much,
Kevin. You are a legend, sir.
I'm going to sign off now.
Before you go, Before you go, where can people find you online? Do you do a Facebook or a Twitter or anything like that? People are asking in the show.
No, I don't.
No? Okay.
Good for you. You're Batman.
Yeah, you're better than
I'm
we
Batman,
are.
Batman, damn it. I don't need that stuff.
Much better than we are.
Stephanie's got our email address. If you have anything coming up, please let us know. We will plug the shit out of it for you.
Great. All righty. I appreciate it.
No, thank you very much, sir.
Take care. Good luck.
Thank you, Kevin.
Thank you.
Take care.
Bye.
And so that was Batman. How are we doing, guys?
I've peed myself 5 times.
Good stuff.
I love Kevin Conroy like Jesus.
I don't love Jesus that much.
Oh, my God.
Good times. Good
Did my request kind of turn him off on the whole thing? Because he was like, I'm fucking out of here after that.
No.
What did you guys just make me say?
No,
right. Why do I miss having a basement?
Wait a minute. I know who you guys are. You're those Raincore fuckers!
And we're back.
And that's it from the crew at Pals on Pages.
What's that?
I'm pretty sure that that was PALS on Pages.
Oh, really? I'll just...
minus an NE. But that's okay. We will change our URL.
No, I'll just edit the shit out of it. Don't worry. It'll work.
Oh, man. I felt like an asshole interrupting him. Oh, my God.
Well,
I wanted to die.
That's kind of your role, man, as the interviewer, is to get the questions out. It's all good. Don't worry. That went surprising. That went smashingly well, guys. Good stuff.
Like, did Shirley Walker do that? Yeah, it was Shirley Walker. And then he continues. I was like, oh, my God, I interrupted Kevin Conroy.
It's all good. All good. Fucking sweet dude, man. Good stuff.
I really wanted to throw in at the end, so what's going on?
I would have reached through the internet and choked you out. I would have choked you out with my hate. I would have hate choked you.
Kevin, one last question. What's going on?
I think J. Scott Campbell would have choked you with his hate from wherever he is.
J. Scott Campbell tunes in like, man, I love those guys on Panels on Pages, and I love Kevin Conroy. What the fuck? Have you learned nothing, K-Wac?
Damn. That was good times. Good, good stuff. Okay, so we're going to take a break now and reset, take care of some business.
Change our undies.
Uh-huh.
Change the undies. I need to lubricate the ye olde throat with a beverage of some kind. And
with the tip of my dick.
Something like
penis.
That. And now we're
back
on. We
got to cram in these dick jokes. So
yeah.
We got to cram in the dicks.
We never did the FMK. We never did the FMK, and thank God we didn't do it.
I like how Matt sounds horrified and then realizes what he's saying.
No, all today, I was like, oh, please, God, don't let him do an FMK. And then I checked the boards real quick, and it's like, yeah, we need to do an FMK. Hell yeah, we need to ask him if he'll bang Gordon. It's like, what? Oh. Okay, as Kevin Conroy, would you bang Gordon? No. Okay, as Batman.
Nah, it's all good, everybody. Good stuff.
Kevin Conroy, fuck, marry, kill Mark Hamill, Tim Daly, or Paul Dini.
Oh, you should have said Clancy Brown.
No, you put Paul Dini in there so you can marry him and steal some of his lovely wife on the side.
No way. Because Clancy Brown, I've seen Pet Sematary too. He likes it rough.
Yeah. What the hell, dude?
Yeah. And Shawshank Redemption.
All right, so we're gonna take a break. Reset. We've got some Kevin Conroy coming up for the break. Musical Kevin Conroy. Thanks to Matt for giving me a fucking aneurysm. At the 11th hour, he's like, no, don't use that thing you spent hours putting together. Use this instead. I'm like, son of a bitch. Okay. So, yeah, we're going to use this. We're going to go out. We'll be back in about 2 minutes or so. We're going to reset and get our stuff together. And we'll be back to our regularly scheduled programming. Thanks.